You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM. Melting Pot is the name of the show. My name is Michael Barnes, and it is truly an honor to welcome into our studios Shuggy Otis. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine, thank you.
You're here, back playing music, and there are a number of reasons for you coming back, which hopefully we'll be able to get into this interview. But I kind of wanted to take things all the way back to the beginning in some ways, and just talk about coming up in the kind of family that you did as the son of Johnny Otis and what that was like.
Oh, it was great because I got to see him rehearse his band every week, and that's one of the things I think that it influenced me to want to be a musician. So that's the basic thing I can remember, and I wanted to be a drummer, but it turned out that I wouldn't.
How did you end up making the move to guitar as opposed to drums?
Well, I don't know. When I got in my teens, I just got interested in the guitar. I had long forgot about the drums as being serious about it. And then I was 11 when I started playing. And the guitar craze was going on, you know, a lot of rock and roll was happening. And I was, you know, I wanted a guitar. Every time somebody got on TV with a guitar, I was there. Oh, checking it out, you know, so I just fell in love with the guitar, and that's what I wanted, and that's what I got.
Were there particular guitarists? I mean, when I hear you play on those records and really up to the present time, there are some particular people who I feel like I hear a bit of influence from, but were there particular guitar players that you felt drawn to during that time?
Not really. At that time when I started playing, I was playing a lot of rock. I was playing with the radio and then playing with the R&B stations. When I started playing, I didn't have any really favorites yet, you know, until Jimi Hendrix came out, kind of opened my mind up. And, well, you know, I was familiar with B.B. King. I remember seeing an album in my dad's bedroom once, and he had a little record player on the floor, and I must have been maybe, I don't know, maybe 9 or 10. And I remember putting that album on. I was by myself. And I would, you know, put some of his records on every now and then. My father had a big collection. Freddie King had an album with Hideaway on it. There was a Chuck Berry album. I can't remember the name of it. But I would just look at these covers. Sometimes I just look at them with the guitar. And I play them, too. As well, but there was this B.B. King album in particular that I remember playing way before the British invasion. I mean, I was buying records with my sisters. Don and Dewey was playing with my father's band, and they'd come over and rehearse every weekend, so they were like also like friends, part of the family, you know, like our uncles or something. But we buy their records because we like their music, you know. So I was buying records ever since I was a little kid. But favorite guitar players, I guess I started opening my head up when I started hearing what the blues was all about. So, you know, everybody goes straight to B.B. King because his style, I think, was probably the biggest influence on rock, I would say. It came with T-Bone Walker first, and then B.B. King, that style. Those two are the ones that should be credited for the rock and roll style that's been played for so many years, you know. And every rock band you hear, what they're doing, they're trying to play like B.B. King.
Yeah.
You know, behind a wall of amps.
Yeah. It seems that influence of one of the Kings, if not B.B. King or Freddie King or Albert King.
Right.
You know, one of those three Kings.
Right.
And it that's, I always, in hearing your music, I always heard a little bit of that. A little bit of the kind of, you know, more psychedelic blues inflected sound of Hendrix. Also always thought maybe a little bit of Albert Collins.
Oh yeah, he's one of my favorites, a special favorite because, well, he had a style of his own. I mean, he had a really a fiery style, you know. Yeah, I got to meet him, and he let me play his guitar right here, I think. And at this station years ago on my father's show. See, I used to go see him all the time. And my dad would invite guests on, you know. And sometimes I'd play with him and sometimes I wouldn't. I don't remember playing with him. If I did, it was rhythm. But he let me play his guitar and everything. He had it tuned odd tuning, which I remember. But wow, when I first saw him, I had never heard of him. Mm-hmm. And me and my brother-in-law used to go to these blues clubs, Ash Grove in particular, and also concerts with rock groups, because we were into rock groups. We'd go see Cream, Jeff Beck, and all those people. I remember going to a concert where they had a lot of psychedelic groups from San Francisco there. They were doing a benefit for KPFA, I think. KPFK. And, I checked out that rock stuff. I was into it a little bit. The closest I got to getting into a psychedelic sound would be Jimi Hendrix, I think, because he took it somewhere different. Obviously, he changed music. And it wasn't anything like anybody heard, you know.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that I found interesting about kind of comparison between the early recordings or earliest recordings we had from you, especially under your own name, not just kind of work you did with your father's groups or like the work with Al Kooper, but when you started putting records out under your own name, just that incredible mix of those different sounds. Like there was some of the blues that was in there, there was some of the kind of the rock influence and some of increasingly kind of like a funkier kind of influence, especially by the time you get to Freedom Flight. Yeah. There's much more of that funk kind of in it. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about those records and especially about one of the songs. There are a lot of different songs that people kind of get introduced to the music of Shuggie Otis through. Mm-hmm. And I think one of them is likely Strawberry Letter 23, a song that many people may have heard somebody else do, the Brothers Johnson. That was actually the first time I heard that song was their version. And then some years later, I heard your version and completely flipped out, both knowing that that was the original and also because even though they're similar, the distinctiveness and the distinctive quality of your music and your vocal stylings just took the song that was already a great song in and of itself, just took it to a new level. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about just how that song in particular, how it came together, and you know a little bit about the song and the title, because I think that sometimes people are a little, there's kind of like a mystery to Strawberry Letter 23.
Yeah, the title, I came up with that after writing the song, because there's a line in there that says, "A present from you, Strawberry Letter 22. Now, what that means is, it's the 22nd letter that this boy and girl have been writing. Mm-hmm. To each other. They're writing love letters back and forth. And they're in this paradise kind of a place. And so that's what the song is about. It's just about these, a boy and a girl in this fantasy land. And they're in love. And that's all the song is about, really. I mean, it has a deeper meaning to me now, but I wouldn't go into it. It's too personal. It's too crazy to explain. And take too long. And some people wouldn't believe it anyway.
And here now is the original version, Shuggie Otis's version of Strawberry Letter 23, right now for you on KPFK 90.7 FM.
Feel something.
I'm thinking back, you know, I think it's because Strawberry Letter 23 is why they let me experiment at all. And I've heard so many different questions about why do I think the label dropped me. Well, for instance, one person said, do you think it's because Strawberry Letter 23 was becoming successful? Well, see, my version didn't hit. And they said, you know, so that's kind of odd to me. Mine wasn't successful. And they were implying that you were becoming successful and they wanted to keep you down. No, they actually wanted me to make it, you know. But see, I joined the label playing blues rock. I was trying to get a style. My first album, I still didn't really know what I was going to do yet. I hadn't started writing yet, really. I was 15. And I started writing shortly after that. I mean, well, in that album, I co-wrote some things. I wrote some music on it. No words, but I wrote some music on it. And then on the second album, Freedom Flight, I was starting to stretch out and write, you know, more stuff and more words. And Strawberry Letter was different. And we left the Rhythm King on there. I was going to put drums on there, but we left it on. One day when we came to work on it, I was going to put the drums on, and the engineer said, well, wait, listen to it like it is. So me and my father sat and listened to it, and we all just said, yeah, you know, it's okay. So I said, yeah, why not? It's okay like it is. You know, I was thinking, I guess, use a drum machine on a record, and I wanted to put real drums on it. I never found out what that would sound like. It didn't matter. It had its own character. And it kind of sounded like real drums in a strange way. You didn't really know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if a musician would listen to it, say, what is that? It's a drum. It's some drums, right? Because it sounds like drums, but it's not. You know, it's not drum samples at all. It's an electronic analog drum. I don't know how they did it, but it's completely different. And I like that little box. There's some other ones that they put out. Ace had one. We had one of those, and my brother had one, a Roland one. But that's the one I like the best, anyway.
Hmm. I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about that record in particular, because there are a couple of very interesting things kind of connected to that particular album. One of them is the use of particular sounds that you employ in there, particularly a drum machine, that some other people had used before. But I was wondering, was it very much connected to the fact that on that record also you play almost all of the instruments on the record? Was it more of kind of like a technical thing, or was it connected to the sound of kind of that drum machine kind of sound that would come out?
It was a technical. I used it for a metronome.
Okay.
So I could overdub drums later. Now, as I started using it, I started, you know, saying it sounds good with this Rhythm King beat on there or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, the record company gave me free rein, so I was able to do all these things.
Okay.
Anything I wanted. So sometimes, you know, it took a little while for me at times. I would take my time with it because I didn't want to rush into it. I wanted to be as perfect as I could. You know, I was coming up with these kind of strange ideas that, you know, no one's ever put down on tape, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Rhythm King came along because I you know, I found out that you could record tracks with it, and Sly Stone was doing it. Now, there was click tracks. I mean, there was this, I remember way before the Rhythm King, my father had this other studio. He had co-partners, had a studio in Hollywood, El Dorado Studios. And once they talked about putting on a click track, I had never heard it before. It's just a metronome, tick tock, tick tock. Mm-hmm. But see, the Rhythm King had all these beats and a speed control,
yeah,
as well. So as many buttons as you could push down, they would stay down. It forced them to stay down. And then you'd get all these strange different rhythms, you know,
yeah,
by experimenting with the combinations of buttons. And that's, for instance, on Not Available, that's what I did. like four different buttons that I used, and it gets that sound, that beat. And Sparkle City, the same thing, has a real funny kind of a beat that you have to, you know, have to figure it out. I don't even remember anymore, but I could figure it out probably if I stayed with it. But those, the Rhythm King it's fun. I have another one now. That my other one I lost, but I went and bought another one a couple of years ago, so I still use it.
Hmm. Yeah, and just to talk about a couple of the different tracks on there, actually, we want to talk about the title track first, and then maybe get into a couple of things that you were just talking about just how distinctive the sound of the record is, and kind of how unconventional it is in a lot of ways too. Mm-hmm. The title track that leads off the album, to me, it's one of the most distinctive funk songs of that period of time, both in terms of how it has this very kind of very bright and sunny tone to the music and also the lyrics. The lyrics, I've never really been able to figure out a lot of lyrics. You know, it starts off with, you know, I had a rainy day. I'm in a sneak back situation, and here's a pencil pad going to spread some information. The best I've been able to make it kind of sounds to me almost like a making up kind of song, like people in a relationship and something has gone wrong and kind of trying to kind of make up for it. But
I'll tell you what the song is actually about. It's okay. About writing a song. I realized that as I wrote it, I said, this song is about writing a song.
From an album of the same name, recently reissued, along with an entire second disc of previously unreleased material, this is the title track from that record, Inspiration Information, on KPFK and Melting Pot.
Bye. it only took me about 20 minutes to write that song. And I realized, I guess afterwards, I said that this song is actually about writing a song. You know, maybe I thought about it while I was writing it, but that's what it's about. And I thought it was, I had never heard, you know, an idea like that before. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a little different. But, you know, it's not that it was different that I liked it. I liked the music. And it doesn't have to be different for me to like it. You know, it has, doesn't have to be something you never heard. You know, I like a lot of styles of music.
Mm-hmm.
So
it seems to me that when music is legitimately ahead of its time, that, you know, people don't hear it in quite the way that they should. And the music that you recorded, particularly on Inspiration Information, was music that it seems like found an audience at the time, but also it kind of took people's ears a little while to catch up to kind of what you did then. And that's a record that you could release that record just brand new right now, and it would sound fresh and be in everybody's top 10 list, you know, for 2013.
Wow.
It's a record that really, you know, that's the thing about really classic music. And for me, I put it up there with, you know, like Forever Changes from Arthur Lee and Love and Electric Ladyland from Hendrix and those kinds of records, like the records that you want to make sure somebody hears. You're listening to an interview with Shuggy Otis recorded here at KPFK Los Angeles 90.7 FM, radio powered by the people. My favorite track on Inspiration Information is Island Letter. It's probably one of my favorite songs of all time.
Oh, thank you.
And it's particularly that moment where after the first verse, the music kind of rushes in. It's just one of the most thrilling things that I think I've ever heard. And I just had to ask you just a little bit about just recollections of putting that song together and kind of what was in your mind and how that all came together.
Oh, it's a love song, you know, about this girl I met overseas on a tour in of Asia. Anyway, I wrote the song, and I put the Rhythm King on, and I started playing these chords on a little Vox portable organ, and had a Univibe unit, which is kind of like a Leslie type of a sound, the Hammond organ, the speaker for a organ, but it's kind of a... Jimi Hendrix used to use this pedal a lot, and you would hear it a lot on some of his last recordings. So I had it on an organ, and I also had a wah-wah pedal, and then I'd throw the Rhythm King on. So I remember coming up with these chords, and then one night I did this one chord where it goes into the Island Letter right before the A, the E to the D. And anyway, so I just kept going with it and kept adding instruments. Being in the studio, my father would be there with the engineer. He said, okay, you got that part done? So, okay, go to another one. We had done this so many times before with other recordings. I was doing a lot of overdubbing with my dad. Guitars and bass, mostly. Every now and then, some piano, organ. But when I got on my album, I was able to play more keyboards.
Here now is Island Letter, also from Inspiration Information on KPFK and Melting Pot.
mistakes, but I guess. And you're here without holding a vest. Could you tell that this was going to last? Oh, I.
Could you talk a little bit about what happened in terms of after Inspiration Information gets recorded, gets released, up until the present time? I mean, there was a long period of time where it seemed like you were no longer in the business in some respects. People in Pacifica, people at KPFK and KPFA, you know, we kind of knew you were still here, especially every now and again hearing you with the Johnny Otis Show. But could you talk a little bit about kind of what happened in that in between period of time after the release of Inspiration Information and up to now with this reissue and with the issue of Wings of Love and all this previously unreleased music?
The reason I dropped out initially was because I was dropped from the label.
Okay.
And it wasn't just me, I found out years later, because I thought I had done something. But they had gotten rid of all the R&B and jazz acts as well when they dropped my father and me. And so this, I heard this 30-some years later. After the fact, it didn't matter. I never really, it didn't bother me after, I guess, the first year. You know, I got used to it so quick. I had a happy life, thank God. I never worried about it.
Hmm.
I always thought I'd come back to music one day, mm-hmm. and play. I didn't know when. I thought it would be a little bit later because of the way things were going. Years were going by, you know. I tried every year, you know, to get some kind of a deal going all those years, mm-hmm. believe it or not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems really believable with this set because there's that whole second disc, mm-hmm. Wings of Love, that now kind of fills in the gap that for a lot of people thought that maybe, you know, you just weren't recording during that period of time. But it's clear that you were always making music, you know, in the years since Inspiration Information.
Yeah. off and on, I was always making music, right?
Was that more of just kind of like wanting to kind of just, in a, on a more personal level, just kind of recording music that you really felt? Or was it that you were kind of in mind trying to get back into the business? Or was it just kind of because you had the studio at that point, and so you could record music kind of whenever the feeling came to you? Was it more just kind of, I have these songs, I want to make this happen now, as opposed to, you know, let's try and do this again?
And you know, I wanted to pick the best songs I could and make an album out of it.
Mm.
And I finally did. And I finally mixed it down. In about 2003, I mixed everything down, but three songs I had to do just little overdubs on. So I took those to another studio. And that was in 2007.
Okay.
So a few more years had to go by. And then I get a phone call from Sony UK in 2011 in February. And then time goes on. We're talking about putting this out. And then the next thing you know, it's out. But it's out as a companion CD.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the deal I had to take to get it out. But I leased it to him, my own record company. It's called Sugartarius Records. So that's a lease deal. I'm not signed with anyone right now. But I'm looking for some kind of a distribution deal for my label.
Okay. And what's been the experience like this time around, more recently, you know, playing and performing again, and not just performing songs that people are kind of familiar with from your previous work, but also playing, incorporating songs from this, well, now it's released, from Wings of Love.
Oh, I'm having fun playing all these songs. They're good songs, you know. I'm writing some new stuff, too,
mm-hmm.
that I'm really excited about. I can't wait to get in the studio, which I have time to do now because we're winding down this leg of the tour, and then we have 2 months off, and then we're going back out in July, starting off in Europe. Then we're gonna come back to the States, and we got about 21 dates lined up there.
Okay,
and we're gonna play the Montreux Jazz Festival,
nice
North Sea Jazz Festival,
nice,
a lot of places.
What's the experience been like, especially this time around playing? Because your music's always been very much a family affair, and with this current group that you have playing behind you, you know, it continues to be the case, especially playing with your son.
Oh, that's great, because my brother joined up in March, or was it February? And then a month later, my son joined up. And now the band is getting tighter and tighter. It is like a family affair with my band as well.
Mm.
And it's great. I couldn't ask for anything more right now. It's really good. The band is great. And the response is really, really good, you know. So, yeah, I'm on a high right now with this. And I just don't want to stop because this is what I wanted to do. I've always wanted to do this anyway, but I had no choice in the matter, you know.
Hmm.
I wanted to come back out in a big way, not a small way. I didn't want to have to climb up again. In other words, I didn't want to play the Chitlin Circuit. Mm-hmm. I'd done that already. I didn't want to put a group together at times just to go hustle for gigs. I wanted the record deal first. See, I came in when I was 15, so I guess that kind of spoiled me.
Mm.
And so I said, well, what's going on here? And after a while, I got the message. I wasn't wanted in the business. And so still, you know, I pushed on, kept sending tapes, CDs. Tapes turned into CDs. And then, yeah, honestly, I hustled with some kind of tapes for years and years and years. I never took much time off as far as trying to get a deal. I was always trying to get a deal.
From that set of music, all of it unreleased up until this moment, with the reissue of Inspiration Information, also the second disc, all unreleased material, music that Shuggie Otis had been recording from pretty much around that time, 1974, 75, up until around 2000. Wings of Love, the name of the second disc, all unreleased material. This song right now is called Fireball of Love, that you're hearing on KPFK 90.7 FM.
Thank you.
Inspiration, information was a turning point, and I love that album. You know, we're doing it, but I can't just play that forever.
Yeah,
you know, I want to start on the new stuff. I have a lot of new ideas that you know have it's always going to be. It's still me, but I have different sounds I'm hearing now that are unlike inspiration, information.
And do you think with the new recording, because I know that you've, at least on your website, mentions that you're recording this new record, and some L.A. musicians like Novena Carmel and Miguel Atwood Ferguson are doing some work with you all along it as well. Could you talk a little about the kind of new directions that maybe we can expect?
The new direction is going to be more aggressive on this album, and I wanted to have more of a party kind of a feel to it. On a lot of the everything, I wanted to have more of a social connection. Inspiration Information is a very introspective, kind of almost introverted album, and people take it too seriously, I think, sometimes. It's not a big deal, really, Inspiration Information. I mean, I like it. I love it because it's, you know, it's something that I like what I did. But I don't trip on it as being, you know, when you read about it, it's all blown up, you know. But I don't believe that stuff. If I did, I couldn't produce anymore.
Mm.
If I thought that I'd reached something and mastered something, that doesn't go with me. That's a falsity. I don't think anyone ever, you know, if they do, then they just stay in one spot. They never grow.
Yeah.
So I like the thought of evolving, moving, exploring music. And, you know, that's the way I go about it. If I get on a guitar, the same thing. If I'm practicing at home or if I practice on a keyboard, the same thing. I won't put down an idea until I hear a song come out of it. You know, if I hear a song, then I'll write it down. If I'm practicing, that's just practice. But if a song will come out of it, and often that happens. I'll just play a few notes, and all of a sudden, I thought, wow, that's a song. You know, I'll hear something in my head, a little rhythm pattern, and it's right there. It's just a matter of putting it together, you know. So a lot of times I'll put it off. Purposely, because I don't feel it's time to work on it yet. You know, I don't know. Some people might say, well, you're just lazy. Well, it's not really that. I know I'm lazy, but it's not all the way that. I like to, well, the thing is, the creative process kind of enables you to do that.
Mm.
Sometimes it forces you to do it because you can't come up with everything all at once. You know, I like to explore with music and see how many instruments I can add and whatnot. But that's not the problem. The problem with me is making the first step and putting the track down, because I often like to work by myself.
Hmm.
So I need the motivation. And when I get the motivation, then I can do it. Like, I have a home studio, but I'm not the best motivator for myself. So having Sony be so interested in this music is motivating me. And we'll see, you know, if we want to do business maybe later. I don't know yet, but they're aware that I'm, you know, I just don't want to tour on this album, you know.
Mm.
As much as I love it, I want to get started on the new stuff, and it's going to feature some guest artists. And my band, I have an 8-piece band, and they're great. And so we recorded some stuff in New York for NPR.
Okay.
Live. And it's the first time I'd heard my band live in a studio. And I was knocked out. And the guy was a good mixer. And it was really good, you know. So I know what I can do with this band now. Even more, you know. It's perfect band for me. But I want to get into, as usual, what I see myself doing is experimenting in the studio with, you know, on my own and with the band, or with maybe just one member of the band, two members of the band here and there, you know. So I can break it up any way I want to.
Mm.
And I want to do some live tracks as well, now that I've heard the band play and how well. Oh, you know, that just makes it all the better.
Yeah.
Because I've heard us live. We, you know, we did about 3 songs. And we had played them. We've been playing them every night, so they're like perfect, you know. Well, I hate that word, but they came out good until I started making mistakes on one song. I said, oh, well, forget it. It was really sloppy. But I said, you could edit it out or whatever. Maybe I played the wrong notes. I'm playing it a different way now. But that's just the funny part about it. But everything else is it's gonna be good. The sounds I'm hearing. I was in Europe, and I came up with these three songs in Europe, and they're really crazy, fantastic songs. If I can get what I heard in my head on tape, I still say that. If I can get it down on a
I do the same
on a recording, I will be have accomplished what I and I intend on doing it.
I'm really, you know, like a lot of people, I would imagine, really fascinated to hear, you know, the new things that are, you know, it's so good to have you fully back. I mean, it's not like you were ever really gone or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have you back, where all of us can kind of, you know, take advantage of hearing you play, uh-huh. you know, seeing you play, and to hear new recordings, new music from Shuggie Otis. It's a really big thrill for a lot of us. And just, you know, wanted to make sure you knew how much you were appreciated.
Oh, yeah. I've been meeting people, you know, all over the world. And it can be overwhelming sometimes. You know, but I mean, in a good way, in a very good way. So much so that, you know, you don't believe it's happening. And people are being nice to you all of a sudden.
I know we're actually a little over time, so I want to get you out of here so you can get on your way. I do want to it's been such a great pleasure to spend this time with you and talk with you about your music, Shuggie. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And again, just thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're going to close out this interview playing you the title track from that second disc, which once again has been reissued along with the classic album Inspiration Information. The second disc of all unreleased material that Shuggie Otis recorded from 1975 to the year 2000. This song right now is Wings of Love, and you're hearing it on KPFK and Melting Pot.